Good morning. This is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, March 31st, 2024. Some local news. Sunday storms slam Coles County. More storms may come on Wednesday. By Tony Reed. Charleston. The National Weather Service said power poles were knocked down in the Charleston area Sunday, as a storm front swept through the area. Hail to 1 inch was reported in the small community of Ashmore, and Ameren, Illinois outage maps showed hundreds of people were without power in various Coles County locations at the height of the early afternoon storms. Meteorologist Ben Dubelbeis with the National Weather Service office in Lincoln said wind gusts to 45 miles an hour were recorded at the Coles County Airport. We had several power poles that were blown down west of Charleston about 1:35 p.m., Dubelbeis said. Some of the strongest gusts, however, battered Champaign County, with the airport there recording one of 68 miles per hour at 1:35 p.m. State police reported that a semi-truck flipped over on Interstate 74 near Ogden, closing the westbound lanes for a time. So far, we have not had any confirmed tornadoes, although there were tornado warnings issued for rotation that was seen on the radar. The Decatur area appeared to have escaped the worst of the early Sunday afternoon storms. Dubelbeis said the storm front lifted as it tracked to the northeast and skirted just south of a lot of our big population centers here in central Illinois. Decatur's turn for trouble might arrive Wednesday, when another round of thunderstorms is due to blow in. The Storm Prediction Center has us in a 30% risk for severe weather, which is pretty high end for a day four forecast, the meteorologist said. You don't see this too terribly often. He said it looks like a situation similar to Sunday, with widespread storms hammering their way across the region, and a good percentage of them having the potential to become severe. From the front page, healthcare more than an inconvenience. Patients' pharmacy struggle as PBMS drives up costs, limit access. By Michael Molson. Springfield. On a sweltering July day in Springfield, Heather Anderson, a 47-year-old resident of the capital city, walked out onto her front porch and into a nightmare. At her feet was a package she hadn't expected, a delivery containing her prescribed Stelara, a vital injection that keeps her psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis under control. The medication is supposed to remain chilled between 35 and 46 degrees Fahrenheit, but with the package baking in the summer heat on her porch, that was not the case. The ice packs were warm, Anderson said. The shot was warm. Panicked, she called the company that supplies her Stelara, Accredo, a specialty pharmacy and subsidiary of Express Scripts, and the third largest pharmacy benefit manager, PBM, in the United States. Anderson explained her concerns, and Accredo's representative told her to take the shot anyway. For 2 weeks, Anderson hoped for the best. Then the symptoms hit. By then, the arthritis was full-blown, she said. Her body was covered head to toe in red, scaly psoriasis patches. It's like a horrible, horrible, horrible sunburn all over your body, Anderson said. Soon after, her joints flared up. She could no longer walk barefoot due to the pain in her feet. Her hands were so weak that she couldn't open bottles or hold objects. All of her joints, elbows, knees, hips, became painful when her arthritis flared. Even her toes swelled up like little sausages. I'm in tears because it hurts so bad, Anderson said. Both Anderson's battle wasn't just with her body, it was also with Accredo. She had already paid a $150 copay for a damaged injection. Now she was being told she'd need to pay it again for a replacement. "I've already paid the $150, and that was for a bad shot," Anderson said. "Why do I have to pay another $150 just to get a replacement?" After weeks of calls, Accredo finally relented and sent a new dose without charging her another $150. To this day, Anderson dreads delivery days, but she has no choice. Her insurer, through Express Scripts, requires her to get Stelara by mail from Accredo. She cannot pick it up from her local pharmacy. What are PBMs? Anderson's experience isn't unique, and it traces back to the often unseen role of PBMs in the U.S. healthcare system. PBMs are the middlemen between health insurance companies, drug manufacturers, and pharmacies. Originally, they were meant to help manage prescription drug benefits for health plans, employers, and government programs such as Medicaid. Today, many pharmacists and others in the pharmaceutical industry argue that PBMs are focused more on profit than patient care, steering patients toward their own vertically integrated pharmacies, like CVS Caremark, directing patients toward CVS, or Optimum Rx toward United Health affiliated providers. J.B. Pritzker took aim at PBMs during his State of the State address in February, and he is backing a legislative measure that would rein them in. One of the great ironies of our modern age is that breakthroughs in research are producing medications that can treat and even cure long-standing chronic diseases, but the high costs of the drugs are making them unaffordable for those who need them most, Pritzker said during his address. What's causing that? Well, patients, healthcare providers, and independent pharmacists will all tell you that pharmacy benefit managers, or PBMs, are driving up prices. The legislation's Senate Bill 2385, filed by State Senator David Kohler, Democrat, Peoria, would cure PBM abuses by stopping steering, mandating fair reimbursement, and requiring PBMs to submit annual pricing reports. The bill, which has been assigned to the Senate Executive Committee, is still being negotiated. Pritzker, who last year took on healthcare companies in a successful effort to ban the cost control measure known as STEP therapy, along with reining in prior authorization, said PBMs extract extra profits from patients through opaque and often predatory tactics. They are not doctors, but they work with insurance companies to deny the people their drugs and treatments that doctors prescribe, the governor said. Not only are they driving up healthcare costs for Illinois families by hundreds of millions of dollars per year, but they are also putting small, local, independent pharmacies out of business. According to the American Medical Association, nationally, insurers that are vertically integrated with a PBM covered 72% of people with a communal Medicare Plan D prescription drug plan. Essentially, this means the largest PBMs, CVS Health, Optimum Rx, Express Scripts, and Prime Therapeutics, dominate the market. This monopolization has ripple effects. Independent pharmacies are being squeezed out of business, unable to compete or even survive. Patients then lose access to nearby pharmacies, and pharmacy deserts begin to grow. In urban areas, a pharmacy desert is defined as a low-income area with limited vehicle access and no pharmacy within a half mile, or no pharmacy within a mile, regardless of transportation. In rural areas, a pharmacy desert is considered an area where a community of 500 people or more is located at least 10 miles from the nearest pharmacy. The other issue is that PBMs are reimbursing pharmacies, especially local independent pharmacies, well below the actual cost of the drug. We cannot dispense a brand name medication if it means we're going to lose $50, $100, $350, said Lauren Young, owner of Dale's South Lake Pharmacy in Decatur and Coley's Corner Drug in Forsyth. We've seen multiple hundreds of dollars of loss on a single prescription, and that is not feasible for a small business to have to shoulder. And that was just for one patient. And it's not just the drug cost. PBMs also underpay dispensing fees, which cover costs for pill bottles, labels, the salary of the pharmaceutical technician who is providing counseling on the medication, and even electricity. All of these things need to be accounted for, and no pharmacy, and I don't care if you're Walgreens or you're the corner drugstore, nobody can sell enough on the front end to ever make up for the losses in the prescription end, said Monique Whitney, executive director of Pharmacists United for Truth and Transparency. Pharmacies didn't go into the business to sell sundries. They're in the business of dispensing medication. How have PBMs affected Illinois? Between 2009 and 2021, nearly 838 pharmacies closed in Illinois, according to researchers at the Southern Illinois University in Edwardsville. Pharmacy owners have cited poor reimbursement, rising overhead costs, and patient loss due to PBM steering as reasons for closing locations. Dave Falk, who owns 10 independent pharmacies across central and southern Illinois, including the now-closed Save More Pharmacy in Shelbyville, the Family Drug in Shelbyville, and Bertram Pharmacy in Robinson, has had to close 5 of his pharmacies in the past 4 years. 3 of the 5 were the only pharmacies in the community, Falk said. It left those communities without a pharmacy. Falk said residents in those areas now without his pharmacies are having to travel upwards of 18 miles to get to the closest pharmacy, meaning they are living in pharmacy deserts. The same study from SIEUE found that 73% of counties in Illinois fit the definition of pharmacy deserts. PBMs have hidden in the weeds for decades, Falk said. In the last 5 or 6 years, they've gotten so egregious in their actions that it used to be 10% of your business that you've lost money on because of their payment methods. That is one thing. When it's 80%, it's just not sustainable. David Baggett, owner of Petersburg Pharmacy and president of the Illinois Pharmacists Association, has seen similar trends. He said patients are also giving up essential medications due to cost. Medicare Part D is a very unique federal benefit that has a deductible phase. And every year, patients on Medicare Part D come in and they're on Eliquis, which my cost is $575 for a 30-day supply. They come in to get their Eliquis. They're like, what? And I've seen people turn around, walk out. Yeah, wow. Not get it. Find out they've had a heart attack and were in the hospital a week later, Baggett said. Baggett said his patients, like Falk's, have also been steered to PBM-integrated pharmacies. Patients of Baggett's who have lower incomes have been hurt by steering practices most. The people who are doing well financially in our economy, they can just drive to Springfield, right? It's an inconvenience. It's not a massive problem, Baggett said. But what about the people who are on fixed income because they are old or they are poor? Once again, in this freaking nation, we're seeing the people hurt worst by this are the people who are most economically vulnerable. The Pharmaceutical Care Management Association, the national association representing the country's PBMs, did not return multiple requests for comment for this article. Decatur Meet the candidates for City Council. Five seek three elections in Tuesday's. Five seek three seats in Tuesday's election by Brendan Moore. Decatur. The race for Decatur City Council features two incumbents and three challengers vying for three seats on the seven-person body. Councilman Ed Culp, first elected in 2021, and Councilman David Horn, first elected in 2017, are seeking new terms. Newcomers vying for seats include Consuelo Cruz, a microbiologist at Primient, Micah Ray, a pastor at Salem Baptist Church, and Jim Wrigley, the controller for Cole Brothers. Incumbent Councilman Chuck Kuhl is not seeking re-election. The challenges facing the next council are many. Among them, how to keep up neighborhood revitalization initiatives without federal stimulus funds, reverse the spread of blight, and halt decades of population decline. Crime rates have been going down, but remains an issue, and the city budget has gotten tighter in recent years due to inflationary pressures and the rising costs of police and fire pensions, among other reasons. The race has not been particularly contentious, though the candidates have expressed a range of opinions on the major issues facing the city. Culp, Cruz, and Horn have been endorsed by the Decatur Trades and Labor Assembly. The Central Illinois Political Action Committee, which is the political arm of the Decatur Regional Chamber of Commerce, has endorsed Culp, Cruz, and Wrigley. Herald and Review sent questionnaires to all the candidates for Decatur City Council. Four candidates returned replies. Despite numerous requests, Cruz did not. Why are you running for the Decatur City Council? Ed Culp, 56, Decatur City Councilman and Director of Training at the Macon County Law Enforcement Training Center. I'm running for re-election because I felt my first term was very fulfilling, and I am proud of some of our progress. I had a huge learning curve regarding the assistance of the majority to make decisions and feel like the collaboration has improved. There are also a few projects, such as the Brush College Overpass, that I'd like to see through. David Horn, 53, Decatur City Councilman and biology professor at Millikan University. It's been an honor and privilege to serve as a member of the Decatur City Council since 2017. I am running for re-election because I care deeply about the well-being of the 69,000 residents that live here. I am proud of the assistance that I have provided the last 8 years and pleased to work collaboratively with my colleagues on the council to make Decatur better. Micah Ray, 46, administrative pastor at Salem Baptist Church. Population decline is the biggest problem our city faces. A few years back, I read an article stating that we lived in the second most exodus city in the United States. When taxpaying citizens leave Decatur, the financial burden for infrastructure weighs heavier on those of us who remain. Every proposal and every decision must be made with this consideration in mind. I want people to love, not leave, Decatur. I want to be a voice for taxpaying people with common sense. I want to see our city thrive again. Of course, it's a play on my last name, but I truly want to be a ray of hope for Decatur. Jim Wrigley, 66, controller at Cole Enterprises, LLC. This is a bit long-winded, but in the end, I am running to try to help my hometown manage the needs of my fellow citizens in a practical, cost-effective way and reduce the numerous onerous ordinances and processes people encounter when trying to do business in and with the city. To be an ear and spokesperson for my fellow citizens, and to make the city government more accessible to all of us who are not well-connected government experts, and to reduce the large taxes and fees imposed by the city on us, and to help Decatur become a safer place for families. Decatur's population is now below 70,000, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. What steps should the city take to halt and reverse decades of population loss? Ed Culp. Improving quality of life indicators to our city. In recent years, there has been a partnership with other forms of government and local businesses to improve lakeside development and recreational activities, which is more family-oriented. Continue improving our infrastructure to bring more businesses as well as affordable housing. David Horn. The most pressing issue facing the city of Decatur is population decline. Since 2010, the population has declined 10%. To address population decline, the city should focus on public safety, job creation, and neighborhood revitalization. Neighborhood revitalization goes hand in hand with increased public safety, and better neighborhoods attract more people to live in Decatur. Growing entrepreneurial opportunities can also grow the population. The city must recognize and remove barriers that hinder businesses and work collaboratively with our partners. Opportunities for our city include incentives to attract new employers and to encourage growth of pre-existing businesses, growing jobs through neighborhood revitalization, and expanding resources for startups. A thriving entrepreneurial ecosystem in Decatur is critical to our long-term success, creating high-paying jobs and diversifying the economy. Micah Ray. Population decline is the biggest problem our city faces. When taxpaying citizens leave Decatur, the financial burden for infrastructure weighs heavier on those of us who remain. Every proposal and every decision that the city council members must be made with this consideration in mind. We want our families, friends, and neighbors to love, not leave, Decatur. We must support strong communities, job creation, and lower taxes. Jim Wrigley. Continue to encourage economic development, jobs, and encourage the school district to improve its performance. So many people say they would not move to Decatur because they don't want their children in the Decatur School District. Turning to page 5 of the Decatur Herald and Review, National and World News, The Digest. Information sought on Minnesota graduate student. Minneapolis. Officials in Minnesota are seeking answers in the case of a University of Minnesota graduate student who's being detained by U.S. immigration authorities for unknown reasons. University's leadership said Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, detained the student Thursday at an off-campus residence. Officials said the school was not given advance notice about the detention and did not share information with federal authorities. The student's name and nationality have not been released. As the case remains largely a mystery, state and local leaders called on federal authorities to explain their actions. My office and I are doing all we can to get information about this concerning case, Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar said in a post on social media. Crews search frantically for earthquake survivors. Mandalay, Myanmar. The smell of decaying bodies permeated the streets of Myanmar's second largest city on Sunday as people worked frantically by hand to clear rubble in the hope of finding someone still alive, 2 days after a massive earthquake struck that killed more than 1,600 people and left countless others burdened. The 7.7 magnitude quake hit midday with an epicenter near Mandalay, bringing down scores of buildings and damaging other infrastructure like the city's airport. Relief efforts have been hampered by buckled roads, downed bridges, spotty communications, and the challenges of operating in a country in the midst of a civil war. Ukraine. Russian drones hit a military hospital, shopping center, and apartments in Ukraine's second-largest city of Kharkiv, killing two people and wounding dozens. While U.S. President Donald Trump voiced anger at Russian President Vladimir Putin for comments he made about Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Third term. President Donald Trump said Sunday in an interview with NBC News that "I'm not joking about trying to serve a third term," the clearest indication he is considering ways to breach a constitutional barrier against continuing to lead the country after his second term ends in early 2029. Weather. Freezing rain brought down trees and power lines in Michigan and Wisconsin, cutting electricity for thousands of people Sunday in the Upper Great Lakes region, while forecasters said severe weather was on its way to Tennessee. Rocket launch. A rocket from a private European aerospace company launched from Norway on Sunday and crashed into the sea 30 seconds later. Despite the short test flight, ISAR Aerospace said that it successfully completed the first test flight of its orbital launch vehicle. Worldwide DEI. A French minister on Sunday accused U.S. diplomats of interfering in the operations of French companies by sending them a letter telling them that U.S. President Donald Trump's rollback of diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives could apply outside the United States. Deadly crash. A woman is facing multiple charges after she crashed into a family out for a walk in Brooklyn, New York, killing a mother and her two children in what New York City Mayor Eric Adams described as a tragic accident of Shakespearean proportion. From page 4, the Life section. Murder, She Wrote, film afoot. Rich Heldenfels. Question. Is it true that there are plans for a revival of Murder, She Wrote, which would star Jamie Lee Curtis? Answer. In December, Deadline.com broke the news that a Murder, She Wrote movie was in the works, and that Curtis was the top choice to star in it. There's a script, the site reported, but no deal. Still, it said a murder movie made sense. Whodunits are hot, Deadline declared, pointing to the Knives Out movies, a third is due out this year, as well as Kenneth Branagh's Hercule Poirot films, Murder, starring Angela Lansbury as killer catching Jessica Fletcher, ran on CBS from 1984 to 96 with solid ratings, followed by four reunion movies. Reruns still abound, running on Peacock and the Roku channel. And its reboot would echo the recent reboot of another TV mystery staple, Matlock. Of course, many viewers would like to see Lansbury back as Fletcher, but she died in 2022. Curtis, as Deadline noted, is a hot ticket these days, with an Oscar in 2023, an Emmy in 2024, and as much movie work as she might want. Question, will there be more episodes of The Sandman? Answer, there will indeed be more episodes of the series based on Neil Gaiman's comic books to be telecast sometime this year. Singer Johnny Mathis is giving up performing due to age and memory issues. The 89-year-old crooner is committed to playing three more shows on his tour, but then all shows will be canceled as his health problems have accelerated. This has been Mary reading selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, March 31st, 2025. I'll return with the second half. Stay tuned.